and welcome to another episode of State of the Revolution. Today we have with us Tanya Reza, running for chair of the Michigan Democratic Party Progressive Caucus, and also Dennis Murphy, running for the same caucus secretary. Very good. Thank you for coming back, Tanya. You've been here with us before when we did our wrap up for the year.
Thank you for having me.
That was a good conversation, mm-hmm. and we're very happy to welcome Dennis for the first time to the show. And let's actually start with you. You're running for Progressive Caucus chair, and you were telling me earlier that you have some background in politics in the party, and so tell us a little bit about that. I think a lot of people might not know.
Okay, brief rundown, and thanks for the invitation. I kind of got energized over the elections in 2008, and so with Kent County Democrats had a coordinated campaign. I just showed up, volunteered, knocked on doors in 2008, 2010, 2012, 2014. I spent a chunk of time in China in 2015. When I got back from China for my job, I was looking at the Democratic Party's page for the second congressional district, which is where I lived at the time. Mm-hmm. And the previous election cycle, my wife and I went over to a rally in Muskegon at the Union Hall where her brother had organized to have the Mark Schauer, the governor's candidate, Dean Vanderstelt and some other Democratic Party candidates do speeches and presentations. And so I got to meet them. And so 2016, I was watching our second district page. I'm like, who's running against Huizenga this year? Mm-hmm. Nobody said anything. So about the end of December, I'm like, well, if nobody else will, I will. And, you know, fateful words. Mm-hmm. Someone from the district's campaign or committee called me and said, you sure you want to run? I'm like, you're kidding me. You don't have somebody else. I've got a full-time job. I have to work. Mm-hmm. And they go, nobody else has stepped up. So we waited for a couple more weeks. And January 24th, they pulled the plug, said, okay, you're the candidate. So immediately we started collecting signatures to get on the ballot. We got 1,400 of the 1,000 needed and, in time for to get on the ballot. And we just basically ran a low-budget grassroots campaign in a district that was heavily red. Mm-hmm. But it was frustrating experience at times, a good experience at times. And when I was done, I kind of wrote up an assessment of how the campaign went from things that, you know, we did wrong on our side and what we could have done better, but also things of what the party apparatus had done wrong, mm-hmm. and what I thought could have done better. Mm-hmm. And I would like to think in hindsight that they took some of that to heart, because some of the things, like one good example is Kane came into town and held a rally at the Wealthy Theater in downtown Grand Rapids, and the candidate for the third district and I was running for the second district, neither one of us was called, contacted to be involved.
Talking about Tim Kaine.
When he ran as Hillary's vice presidential right. candidate. Here we are. We're the congressional candidates for West Michigan. Mm-hmm. Here's the VP guy. And
right. So this was in 2016.
Yeah, we couldn't even get into the hall. My wife and I, our biggest disappointment was when Chelsea Clinton came and did a rally in Muskegon Heights at a local African-American church, one that I had met the pastor at, mm-hmm. and talked with him at length, and then he let me come in the next Sunday service after they were done with their service and talk to the parishioners in Muskegon Heights. Here we're in the same church as like the gym complex attached, and I'm not from here to that wall away from Chelsea Clinton in the audience, mm-hmm. and other candidates, you know, from Muskegon area are up on stage. And my complaint to the party members is, look, I understand if you don't want to dump money into a campaign, we probably were going to lose because it hasn't had a Democrat in office for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. But this didn't cost them anything. It was free. Mm-hmm. And I was happy to see in this last election cycle that at a lot of the party events in West Michigan, the Best of the West Dinner or rallies in Muskegon, that when they had events going on, Rob Davidson got to get up on stage and talk, and Kathy Albro got to get up on stage and talk. So I don't know if it's just coincidence or if my critique had something to do with it, but it helped give them exposure, mm-hmm. to people, and I think that helped. So, and they both did pretty well for being in mostly Republican districts.
I mean that's really interesting stuff. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff there that really ties into some of the problems in the party in general. But I also wanted to make sure that we get introductions. Before we dive into any of that, Tanya Reza, you want to talk a little bit about your activism leading up to now as you're running for Progressive Caucus Chair?
Sure. I guess I became more involved in. Oh, sorry. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I became more involved, I was active during college. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit more around, I went to school. I was in school during when 9/11 had taken place. Mm-hmm. So I was organizing with the Muslim Students Association, making sure that the Muslim community on campus felt safe, mm-hmm. as well as doing outreach on campus with, you know, the administration, other groups, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I did some organizing through that. I did nonprofit work for a faith-based youth organization for some time. Mm-hmm. And then I did some activism basically on and off since then until 2016. Mm-hmm. And at 2016, I became part of Ann Arbor for Revolution. Mm-hmm. And we basically had a meeting at our home, mm-hmm. Through the Our Revolution website. You know, mm-hmm. we put up a house meeting about a week after the election, mm-hmm. and things took off from there. A lot of people joined, attended our meeting, and we, you know, our organizing started to take shape. Mm-hmm. We were part of the Dem Enter efforts for the February 2017 convention. Mm-hmm. We organized around that. Liano worked. We worked together. Mm-hmm. And then I continued my work with Ann Arbor for Revolution, trying to build relationships in the Ann Arbor area with mm-hmm. other activist organizations, with other mm-hmm. activists. I also became a member at that February 2017 convention mm-hmm. Of the Progressive Caucus. Mm-hmm. And I was one of two representatives for the 12th Congressional District.
Right.
So we did a little bit of organizing around that.
That was you and Subi Rahman was the other one?
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Subi and I. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we served out we are still currently serving our term mm-hmm. In the Progressive Caucus. Mm-hmm. So that's just some of the work that I've done. Mm-hmm. I've also worked with the statewide organizing mm-hmm. With Michigan for Revolution mm-hmm. and done some work with that.
Right. I'd like to talk a little bit about what the Progressive Caucus has done mm-hmm. over the past 2 years mm-hmm. Since you've been involved with that.
Sure.
And then start to get into a discussion about what you'd like to, what both of you see as the, mm-hmm. as what the Progressive Caucus can do next and what things that are important in that area.
Sure. I think, I'm going to think of where do I start? I guess we became a very active caucus. I think we went through a process of going through the bylaws and going through and developing an endorsement process mm-hmm. for candidates.
Right.
I think we also organized a little bit of fundraising for candidates, and we definitely did quite a bit to spread the word about different progressive candidates that were running. Mm-hmm. Our endorsement questionnaire focused on asking candidates about, for example, what are their sources of funding. Mm-hmm. And we really put in a hard line against corporate donations in there. Mm-hmm. We also asked them about their stances on education, minimum wage, healthcare, mm-hmm. et cetera. So mm-hmm. That was the big I think that was the biggest project of the caucus.
Mm-hmm.
So that was some of the organizing that we did. There were also chapters that developed. There's the Mid-Michigan Progressive Caucus. Mm-hmm. The 12th started. We sort of started a chapter in the 12th. Mm-hmm. It has a long way to go, but, you know, mm-hmm. we kind of began those efforts. So we wanted to organize some chapter-wide, some chapters across the state, basically.
Okay. So that's part of what's been achieved so far in the Progressive Caucus mm-hmm. is doing a better job of having clear rules and having a process for doing endorsements
mm-hmm. right.
that really focuses on progressive values and
right.
holds candidates to those values. Is that an accurate assessment of what you were describing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's that's a lot more work than a lot of people think it is, first of all, especially when you've got a large group of people who have to get together and talk about these things when you're talking about, like, candidate questionnaires, to make sure that you're asking the right questions so that you can get answers that really tell you what you want to know about where these candidates are on, on issues, and therefore which candidates the Progressive Caucus wants to get behind.
Right.
There's a lot of I think more of that is needed, because it not just in the Progressive Caucus but in general across the various groups, because you know, we have to have a good vetting process for progressive candidates, so that we're not, blindsided by stuff, and we're having the conversation with the candidate before the endorsement happens, before the primary happens, before the election happens, so that once we work hard to get somebody into office, we have the basis on which to hold their feet to the fire. It's not a surprise to anybody that these are the things that the Progressive Caucus cares about, and these are the things that the members of the Progressive Caucus are going to work to hold people accountable for. Does that make sense to you?
I got those questionnaire responses in the email, so I was able to go back and say, yeah, I like this one, or no, I don't like this one.
Yeah.
So thanks for putting that all together.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. Great.
It's a team effort.
It's a hard thing. I've been in some of those, and there are a lot of contentious. There's a lot of contention about how to word things, even.
Oh, definitely.
It's like
polls. You could slant it, and then you could get bad results.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You need to be careful about how you're asking those kinds of questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's some great background for both of you. So I want to a lot of people still have a big question about what progressivism is. And there's a lot of discussion, there's a lot of pushback on a lot of different sides. Some people say that, some people want to use the term progressive, and other people disagree about whether they're there's a controversy about, for example, around Tulsi Gabbard or other people that are talking about running, various different people across the party, across the country. So, for each of you, can you give me a sense of what you mean by progressive, and what are the key things that you think that progressives in general are looking for?
Me first?
Go first.
Okay, sure. I take a very, I would say, left view, maybe. Okay. It would be the way to put it. I see what I see progressivism is that every single person is like no one person's worth is more than another person's worth. And I think, unfortunately, historically, what has happened is that our laws, colonialism, our history, things like slavery and, the massacre of Native Americans or indigenous peoples, excuse me. So all of that has made things, has created ultimately a system where a lot of people are not everyone is on the same footing, and not everyone has access to the same opportunities. So I think progressivism, I see it as an ideology. Mm-hmm. Where, we are going to engage politically, but we are seeking to make the system, or to build a system that's fair and just. Mm-hmm. But it's not one that is outside of any context, but that one that takes into account the historical context. Mm-hmm. I see it as also, our current economic system of capitalism, or runaway capitalism, has led to, a huge income inequality, like extreme income inequality. And not just that, but people are really struggling to survive. It is extremely unjust where you're working several full-time jobs and you still can't make ends meet. Mm-hmm. So I think progressive policies, such as like the $15 minimum wage, is a good starting point. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as, you know, an end point. I see that as a starting point. Mm-hmm. But we need to have policies where people can make a either even have a, you know, something close to a universal basic income, mm-hmm. and are, you know, and are able to provide and have like that safety and security. Mm-hmm. I also think healthcare for all, mm-hmm. You know, universal daycare, mm-hmm. free public college. These are all things that will lead to a more equitable system. So I consider myself a democratic socialist. So, and I see a lot of progressives see themselves that way as well. So, mm-hmm. this is how I like to mm-hmm. Define progressive. Mm-hmm. This is how I like to see it. And I don't, I think sometimes we're looking for things that are just going to make, or policies that are going to make things just a little bit better. I think, no, we really need policies. We have to make sure that the policies we're advocating for are going to make things better for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, we are, and we have to also make sure that we're looking at socioeconomic inequality, mm-hmm. On the same vein as we're looking at systemic discrimination and how that's affected so many groups, mm-hmm. Whether, you know, it's systemic discrimination based on race, mm-hmm. based on, sexual, identity and orientation and, you know, or, even I think a community that is often overlooked, unfortunately, is the community of people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. So all of these things need to be looked at when we're looking at policies mm-hmm. that are going to improve things for people. So that's mm-hmm. how I see progressivism. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah.
Okay. And Dennis?
I think in the big picture, I think Tanya hit it right. We need to have policies that improve the lives of everybody across the spectrum. I think there's a considerable number of people out there that think that, well, I got where I did without understanding their inherent mm-hmm. benefits that were already built into their life, mm-hmm. and they don't have an understanding that there are other people out there that don't have that same inherent, basically foot up the first step of the ladder. Mm-hmm. And I think a key aspect of progressivism is reining in corporatocracy, or however you want to put it. I mean, these corporations have basically took over control of our government to the point where, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, I don't know any merger that has benefited consumers. Mm-hmm. Everything mm-hmm. has gone up after they've merged hospitals, after they've merged telecoms, after mm-hmm. they've merged pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of things that need to be reined in on a big picture. Mm-hmm. On a smaller picture, we need to expand voter rights, not constrain them. Mm-hmm. I have no problem. I think we should even let felons vote. I mean, I don't see why you should lose your citizenship mm-hmm. and your rights as a citizen mm-hmm. just because you committed a crime.
Well, I would argue, for example, that in the Declaration of Independence, when the founders were trying to justify their split from the previous government that they were part of from the British Empire. They said that, you know, the governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Mm-hmm. There is no one more governed than somebody who's in prison. Mm-hmm. Or, you know.
Oh, absolutely. So. $15 minimum wage, and I've even advocated if we could enact that into legislation, letting the Federal Reserve for areas where living expenses are even higher than that, mm-hmm. than that would sustain, mm-hmm. to let's say New York or San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe it's $15 an hour out in the hinterland, but you get into those areas where the cost of living is even higher. Mm-hmm. Maybe it needs to be 20. Let the Federal Reserve be able to set that threshold mm-hmm. higher, but have the floor at least start at that mm-hmm. 15. Mm-hmm. Environmental protections and climate change, we need to shut down Line 5 as far as a state-level activity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're just basically letting ourselves be a pass-through for an unreliable corporation. Mm-hmm.
An unreliable foreign corporation.
Yeah, Canadian corporation. Right. And I know there's some debate about the college thing, but one of the things I advocated when I was running for Congress was rolling community colleges and trade school into a comprehensive K-14 program mm-hmm. that we got to stop. I mean, when our grandparents were kids, sixth grade, and then they went to work. Mm-hmm. And then the next generation, you know, our parents, high school, then they went to work. Mm-hmm. Now it's like you need something more, mm-hmm. and our public education system should be K through 14 is the best way I can put it. You know, maybe we can discuss, argue about whether the next 2 years to get you a bachelor's degree is free, or maybe, or definitely drive down student loan costs. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've also been advocating the last 2 years is, at the very least, if we can't do some sort of debt forgiveness, we need to shut down Sallie Mae. The government needs to take it over. We need to do retroactive interest rate reduction down to zero. Mm-hmm. So think of somebody who's been paying on their student loan for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. If you retroactively reduce their rate down to zero, mm-hmm. all that part that was a chunk that was going towards interest is now mm-hmm. all of a sudden a big bite off the principal. And I think that sometimes we need to take a baby step. We maybe not get full forgiveness. We can maybe couldn't get some people more in the middle or on the right mm-hmm. to buy in it, but they might be able to buy into a interest rate reduction. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just off the top of my head, those are a few things. But yeah, I think the job of progressivism is to move society towards the greater good for all. And as progressives, I don't think any of us don't see us as a community. Mm-hmm. Too many on the right see themselves as an island, mm-hmm. and they don't understand they're an island within a community, and they're refusing to recognize it, and they think, I got mine, and why can't they get theirs? And I don't think human society evolved like that. I think we evolved because we were communities. Mm-hmm. It's just harder when you're bigger, like a nation,
mm-hmm. sure.
to create a community out of that. But I think it's possible. I mean, the progressive movement did it at the turn of the century over some key issues. At the mm-hmm. time, it was the gold standard. And then Teddy Roosevelt tried to bring it together over some of the corporate and the oligarchies that were starting mm-hmm. to formulate then. And we're right back where we were in 1920 right now. And
In terms of income inequality.
Absolutely. Inequality. And that can all be right. traced back to cracking the unions in 1980, flattening the income tax mm-hmm. instead of making it progressive, mm-hmm. and undermining livable wage.
Yeah.
So and Republican policies.
Trade definitely has a part to do with it. You know, I think there's an argument for fair trade and making sure we can trade with other nations. I mean, that's just a basic economic tenet. But what our government didn't do was do for the people what it should have, where in some segments of society where trade might have undermined, let's say, mm-hmm. textile workers in North Carolina, you know, Norma Rae, mm-hmm. That they needed to step in and help that. Instead, mm-hmm. they just let these communities crash.
Well, I want to push back on you on something there, though, because I really think that in terms of building a progressive movement that actually gets progressive policies passed, we need to not say, well, we're okay if we just reduce the interest rates. I think we need to fight for the full project based on the principles. And the principle to me on education, for example, is that it's not possible to have a truly functioning democracy, which we currently don't have,
no.
without a well-informed and well-educated public. And so when you don't fund education to the extent that people want to be educated, then what you're doing is you're saying we don't actually want democracy. We don't actually want to create the conditions where democracy is most likely to improve.
Well, I don't know if I would agree with that 100%. I mean,
you can have a democracy without a
we absolutely need an educated population, yeah. but okay. you know, I mean, we had fewer college. I mean, I'm a college graduate. I mm-hmm. went to school on student loans. Mm-hmm. We had fewer college graduates in the past, and we had much more democracy. The internet, I think, has
When did we have more democracy?
Well, you had, you know, I mean, I guess it depends on what point you know you look at, but I don't know that a college education is going to make somebody more participatory in education, but I think it's necessary for some careers, for sure.
Well, no, for example, after World War II, there were a ton of people that got educated on the GI Bill.
Right.
That was free college. But not only after World War II, but after Korea as well. And that's actually one of the things that drove the movements from the college campuses that drove the 50s and 60s movements for not only for racial justice. Right. That's something that came from a lot of places, but that's one of the places that it came from, because there were, though the GI Bill often excluded black folks and other and other racial minorities, it did help create more people with more education who from those campuses participated in those movements, swelled the ranks of those movements, and started the anti-war movement anti-poverty movement.
Are we in favor of Social Security?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think we should support it more strongly.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, if he had tried to get Social Security for everybody, unfortunately at that time, he wouldn't have got it. He wouldn't have got it. He went where he could get, and I think...
I don't think compromise
is necessarily a bad thing.
I didn't say compromise was a bad thing. I said that we should have that when we're talking about it, we should make the full case, not retreat from it. We might not be able to get the full case, but we shouldn't retreat from it. What do you think, Tiny?
I think I have to agree with that. I think, I don't have much more to add in terms mm-hmm. of, I just think, yeah, that's why I believe we have this caucus.
Mm-hmm.
I think the party has not made an effort to make the full case.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes, there was a joke, there was a comedian mm-hmm. Doing a sketch, and he said we should have eat the rich healthcare. Like mm-hmm. we should bring eat the rich healthcare to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then if once it goes through the whole process of negotiation, you're going to have something like universal or single payer,
mm-hmm.
basically. So that's sort of the... it was a joke, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's the idea that why not? Why not ask for, why not make the big ask?
Mm-hmm.
But also, I understand, too, that when you make the big ask, you're going to have to also
mm-hmm.
Show how you're going to make it happen, how you can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the, I think right now we're in a moment. I think we have to really take this very seriously, that we're in a political moment where mm-hmm. there's a lot of will,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people... are ready for things like single-payer healthcare. A lot of people are asking and seeking things like minimum, the $15 minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
So you have will on the ground. You have most people are seeking these things. If mm-hmm. you poll people, they're saying these are sound policies and mm-hmm. these are things that can right. definitely happen. And then you also have, and when we talk about lack of funding, where is the money going? Right. Mm-hmm. Where we say we don't have money for this and we don't have money for that. Mm-hmm. And, but as you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says, well, we somehow have the money for war.
Mm-hmm.
We have, we have the money to fund a wall.
Mm-hmm.
What about when we talk about things like education and healthcare? We certainly have the money for those. So mm-hmm. I guess when you have, and this also goes to the politicians, right? Who are you working for? Are you working for your constituents mm-hmm. or are you working for these corporations? So if you're working for your constituents and your constituents are telling you this is what you need to do, mm-hmm. Then you can definitely, you can show and there is a path to making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
But again, mm-hmm. there has to be, that has to be aligned with, mm-hmm. What's happening among your constituents, what's happening among the people, what people believe that they need and they want.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think there is, there's a real serious, desire for these things.
I paid for my schooling with student loans.
Mm-hmm.
The interest wasn't as high as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand it. And my son's got bachelor's degree debts
mm-hmm.
from Grand Valley. So I know what he's looking at. But I go back to what I said. I think we need a K-14. And unless we're going to have litmus tests in the caucus for every issue, and I definitely want single payer, I think we need to raise the minimum wage to 15, if not higher. And I'm pretty much just probably the one thing that I would say I disagree, and I'll be frank about it, mm-hmm. across the board, is I don't necessarily know that we need to offer free bachelor's degrees across the board.
Why not?
Unless you can figure out...
Why not?
Unless you can figure out what the capacity is of the universities, where you're going to put everybody, and is free college going to be free to someone who's Is free college going to be free to Donald Trump Jr.? If he was 18 right now and we had free college, Donald Trump Jr. gets free college, and somebody who grows up in the city whose parents make minimum wage, they get free college. Now, is it fair that Donald Trump Jr. gets free college too? His dad can certainly afford it.
So it's just
saying free college across the board without examining the full ramifications is a giveaway to the wealthy.
So I'm going to completely disagree with you, because the other thing, we're not just saying free college across the board. We're saying free college. And for example, Ocasio-Cortez is saying 70% tax rate on income over $10 million. So when you
marginal tax rate, but I agree with her.
Income over $10 million. So it's not just one policy. And that's the way that I see that the establishment tries to divide people is the fact of the matter is that we have a system right now that is not really coherent in terms of how it functions, but they tell a story about it that makes it seem that way. And when we start telling a story about a system that is actually coherent in how it functions, okay, they want to apply some of these other things to it that make it seem like it's not coherent when it is. And so when you pick out just the education piece and not also talk about changing.
Well, that was the discussion we were having at that time.
Right. So I understand that.
If you want to frame it after the fact that way, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, no. So this is why I'm saying that we should be out, that I think progressives should be out there with the full-throated, this is the plan. Okay. This is the outlines of it. We're gonna fight for that. We might not get there.
I don't necessarily think that should be the plan in that particular one issue. I don't necessarily think that should be the plan. I think my plan is what I think is progressive is K-14. Be more robust of our public education system, and then if we want to take the next step later, if that's feasible. But I know it's become a nice talking point, but my bachelor's degree was an investment in my future and it paid off.
Mm-hmm.
But I also recognize that I was able to pay it off more readily since I got mine in 1983 than somebody who got theirs in 1993, 2003, or 2013.
Right.
It's gotten progressively worse for young people,
right.
and we've done nothing to rein in college tuitions, if you want to talk about looking at it from a holistic standpoint.
Sure, no, absolutely, that's true.
No one's even touched on that. In college, I mean, I think my credits hours were $90 in 1980, 81. Mm-hmm. Now they're, 300 or something? 500?
It's a lot.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. And also, you know, and even how professors and lecturers are paid. It's extreme. Yeah. I mean, in many cases, they're not making
No, my son's a visiting professor at Grand Valley, and after his doctorate, and he's got to get a better living. He's looking for a full-time faculty job.
Yeah.
Right, which, for example, would happen if we had free college for everybody, because there'd be a lot
of people.
You
could expand those. That's true.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break and then come back. And I believe that we'll have another person running for secretary, actually.
Treasurer.
Oh, she's treasurer, yeah.
Treasurer.
Oh, my mistake.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be back with Sarah. I don't have her name.
Tressider.
Tressider. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect.
Just one moment. And we're back with Tanya Reza and Dennis Murphy. Tanya is running for chair of the Progressive Caucus of the Michigan Democratic Party. Dennis is running for the secretary position on the board there. And we're joined now by Sarah Trezetta.
Trezetter,
thank you. Who's running for treasurer of the Progressive Caucus? Sorry you couldn't join us earlier, but I do want to hear about your background in politics, what you've been doing, what you've done, what you've been doing, and then ask you the same question that we were just discussing before the break, which was, what does progressivism mean?
Okay.
So
yeah,
tell us about your history a little bit.
To keep it somewhat short and sweet, I won't give you the I was born on a cloudy day, and I was born on a Tuesday, though. So I first kind of got involved in politics because of my interest in environmental issues. Mm-hmm. I interned for the Sierra Club, which is a environmental nonprofit for mm-hmm. those who might not be aware. And they liked me so much as a volunteer, they decided to hire me on during the 2018 election as their political organizer. Mm-hmm. Along with that time, I started getting involved. I became the finance director for a state race that was endorsed by the Progressive Caucus, so that mm-hmm. was really exciting.
Which race was that?
The 69th district. Her name was Penelope. She didn't win, but it was still an awesome race. Mm-hmm. So I guess some of my most extensive background has been in the 2018 election. Mm-hmm. I was an undergrad before then and kind of focused more on environmental groups and other academic type stuff. I was a biochem major. There wasn't much room for mm-hmm. doing anything else. Mm-hmm. So during my time with the Sierra Club, I was one of my main roles was to plan our fundraisers and our lobby days. I also was in charge of managing our 45 summer interns, mm-hmm. Where we taught them the basics of campaign organizing. So mm-hmm. we had multiple training sessions where we taught them about how to do field work, you know, door knocking for these newbies who had mm-hmm. never knocked a door in their lives. Mm-hmm. We gave them information on how to plan a successful fundraiser, mm-hmm. plan a successful meet and greet. We taught them communication basics, you know, what is something good to say in an email, what's not so good, mm-hmm. you know, social media, all of that great stuff. Mm-hmm. Our interns were super successful. We actually had quite a few that went on to become staffers for people that were elected. Off the top of my head, I know we have a former intern working for Mallory McMorrow now and another intern working for Sean McCann. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of my biggest experiences.
Who are those
folks? Oh, they're Sean two McCann, state senators who flipped races in 2018. They Sean McCann in 2014 lost to Margaret O'Brien by 59 votes, mm-hmm. and he went up for round two and beat her pretty substantially.
Right. Cool.
So, yeah, and then as finance director for Penelope, I helped raise, when I think directly what I helped raise was probably close to like $50,000, all small dollar, individual, mm-hmm. no corporate money, which we're super proud of, probably why we were endorsed. Mm-hmm. And then I also planned our town hall events where we mm-hmm. talked about issues. I think we planned like 8 of them centered mm-hmm. around different issues we cared about.
And you did the finance stuff for that, including the reporting to the state and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's probably what I should have really let off on is that not only have I helped manage campaign finances and turning in quarterly and annual mm-hmm. reports, but I've also helped manage PAC finance reports as well. Mm-hmm. So I've experience with both.
Okay. So very cool. So I'm just to catch you up to our conversation that we've been having. I just asked both of our other guests what their definition of progressive is, or what they think progressivism means, and what's most important to that idea.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, okay. So my answer.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny because for the longest time, I actually didn't know if I was a true progressive, and I say that because you know I cared about the environment, I cared about all the issues that I actually lined up with the progressive, but I was like, oh, you know, I'm a Democrat. But then I went to the Netherlands for a study abroad, and mm-hmm. I realized what like kind of the more social democratic mm-hmm. society looks like, and I was like, this is way better than mm-hmm. what we've got going on here.
Yep.
And so I really fell in love with, I guess, the social democrat kind of side of things. And so I guess progressive means to me is that we take the you know, what the people need, you know, their basic needs, and mm-hmm. We put that in charge over, you know, mm-hmm. making X amount of dollars. You know, mm-hmm. I coming from a public health standpoint, there's always a number amount, it seems to be, on people's health, on people's well-being. And I think being progressive is saying that, you know, money isn't the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to make sure that our people are mm-hmm. they have their basic rights, you know, mm-hmm. and I think being a progressive is fighting for those issues that mm-hmm. you think would be common sense, but they're just,
mm-hmm.
they lack in our
right.
country.
Right. So we were just before you came in, we were having a little bit of a disagreement, me and Dennis, about okay. Dennis was
a small.
Well, and I want to say, you know, I don't mean to come across as, you know, if you don't believe in this, mm-hmm. then you're not. I'm not saying that means you're not progressive.
I've had people say that.
Okay,
one point.
Right. I understand that people do say that. That's why I wanted to come back for a second and say that's not what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is that. In order to create the political space to move the projects that we want to move forward, all of the ones that you and I would agree on, I think, in any substantial degree, we have to open up that political space by having people out front, including people in high positions of visibility and authority in the legislature and the government, et cetera, making the full argument and saying, okay, if we can't get all the way there, then, you know, we can get here. And if when we get closer, we find out that there's something that doesn't really quite work, okay, then we can examine that at that point. My argument isn't that your position isn't progressive. My argument is that I think that, we might find your position along the way. That might be someplace that we pass through. We might get there and go, you know what, this is as far as we need to go. But I just don't think that we're even going to get there unless we start out making the full argument out front. So that's the argument that I'm making. And I know that there are lots of progressives that disagree with me on that. But that's the argument that I'm making. I'm not saying that you're not progressive. I'm not trying to say that any of that. I wouldn't, you know, so that I just want to clarify that. So I want to get back to the Progressive Caucus, because that's what everybody here is running for. So what are the things that the Progressive Caucus right now does well, and what are the things that you would like to see it do in the future? You know, what are the improvements that you would like to see the caucus make? And I'll throw that open to, you know, whoever wants to go first.
I think what she said earlier about the survey to candidates mm-hmm. was a great first step. One of the things I was a little disturbed about was the endorsement process. Basically, it's almost set up, it seemed to me from reading the bylaws, that if every person in the caucus said, yeah, we like candidate X, unless 50% of the board agreed, that person didn't get an endorsement. I mean, we can't gripe about superdelegates and then put our own superdelegate process in place, to put it in a nutshell. I think the endorsement questionnaires were done really well, and I like getting them in the mail, so I thought that was really well done. Mm-hmm. I think the Progressive Caucus page needs to have all the officers listed. Whether or not they want to have their contact information, I think that's a privacy issue on their part. But at least if somebody went to the page, you could say, you know, Tanya's chair, so-and-so's mm-hmm. vice chair, so-and-so. So they know who it is. I've been pushing the same thing in Kent County. Mm-hmm. You go to the Kent County Democratic page, you don't know who anybody is unless you go to all the meetings. They should be open up the page and say, who's the chair, who's the vice chair, who's the secretary, who's on the executive committee. Yeah.
And a way to contact them, even if it's not, you know, their personal
information. Or through a generic email, you know, to the caucus.
Generic, sure. Something like that, sure.
I think that the caucus ought to have some outreach committees, mm-hmm. You know, like subcommittees to reach out to the LGBTQ caucuses and groups, to reach out to labor, reach out to the African American community or in any caucus that might be within. So the caucus then is reaching out to these other caucuses and those mm-hmm. communities to try to explain why we want them to be part of mm-hmm. what we do and sometimes you might find out where they disagree, but you know, you also could find out where, hey, you know, we really do agree with that. Mm-hmm. And that would help, I think, advance the mm-hmm. progressive ideals mm-hmm. by doing those outreaches and not just, we don't want to stay so insular, mm-hmm. I guess, in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. So those are just three things I think we could do off the top that would be get us out there a little bit more.
Okay. Tanya?
Yeah, I agree with most of what Dennis said. And mm-hmm. I think definitely... you know, making sure that we have more information on our website, making sure that everyone knows who's who. I think that's, increasing transparency overall, making sure minutes and more documentation is available on our site, mm-hmm. You know, disclosing, you know, fundraising and how and what's going on with that. I think that's mm-hmm. an important piece. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to add, and also reaching out to other caucuses, and I know that a lot of times the thing with the Progressive Caucus is that it's a values-based group. And, you know, I know that we're advocating for a lot of issues based on values, but and we share those values with, and those issues do align with a lot of the other issues that different caucuses are advocating for. So definitely making sure we have a, you know, good communication between all the caucuses is important. Another very important thing to me is organizing outside of the party. Something that I think is extremely important is building coalitions where we can, where we have groups coming together around maybe advocating for a certain policy or around, you know, trying to have a particular candidate in place that represents the community. I think, too, on the Progressive Caucus, what I think we need to work on is representation. We need to have people representing, you know, represented across socioeconomic class, people represented across race, people, you know, represented across if they, you know, whether they identify as LGBTQ, people, you know, and even people with, again, you know, from the people who have disabilities, too. I think there is, again, because the Progressive Caucus is advocating for all these different communities, we have to do our best to increase representation from those communities. No one person is going to be able to speak for every single community. I understand that we do share a lot of our values, but I think representation is very important. It's a great way to learn from one another. It's a great way to make sure that our blind spots are addressed when we are talking about issues. So that's something that's very important to me. And I think and the way that's done is by encouraging and increasing membership in the party and creating a place for, you know, for people within the party. So I think sometimes people don't feel like they would, you know, they're, they feel like sometimes the party has advocated for policies and, or has not advocated for policies that would benefit them. I would want the Progressive Caucus to be a place where those people feel, they can come and, you know, discuss the policies they feel are going to benefit them and their communities. So.
Okay. Sarah?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I agree with both people on the things that we can improve on. I think, and something that a lot of organizations in general should be a lot better at is handing off the mic. A lot of people like to, you know, an issue comes around, whether it's an environmental justice issue or a social economics issue. Socioeconomic, I don't know why I couldn't say that. And we want to speak for a community, and it's with the best intentions. But I think the Progressive Caucus, I think we should put ourselves into a position to be a backing force, a behind-the-scenes force for the communities that are being affected by these issues, and give them the mic, and let them be the leaders, and let them take. So I'm very for that idea. I'm totally happy being behind the scenes and letting the communities who are actually dealing with these issues be the ones who make the change and allow me to be an ally and help in any way I can. So I think the Progressive Caucus being a value-based group, I think we should really position ourselves to make that our motto on things, honestly. And whether those people are part of the Progressive Caucus or not, you know? So I think that's really important. And then communication within the caucus, I think, is something that we can really improve upon. Coming from the Sierra Club, I can say a really good strategy is just consistent communication, whether it's a monthly newsletter, a biweekly newsletter, outlining events that are coming up that we want to highlight, any newsworthy articles that the Progressive Caucus feels, you know, represents stuff we're dealing with. And then also one of the things that I implemented in the Sierra Club and that I really liked was a volunteer highlight, where we took someone who wasn't a board member, wasn't an officer, was just a regular volunteer with the Sierra Club, and we interviewed them and found out what they were doing and how they were helping the environmental movement. And I think the Progressive Caucus could do the same thing and really value their members.
Volunteer of the month, so to speak.
Yeah, basically. And just giving them kind of a place to share what they're doing, you know, whether they're in Ann Arbor or the Upper Peninsula. I'm up in the UP every once in a while. So, yeah, those are two things that I would want to implement.
Cool. I have a question about that because I'm a rules nut, as a lot of people know. And right now, the way that the Progressive Caucus is structured is you have the four officers: chair, vice chair, secretary, and treasurer. And then you have board members, two from each congressional district.
Right.
Am I right about that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And they have to be male and female, right?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. That's the current. That's right. the current language in the rules.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
So actually, one of the, I'll come back to that. You know, actually, in the rules committee, we just changed in the Democratic Party rules to of a different gender as opposed to man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something to consider. But what I really wanted to talk about here is that you talked a lot about how you want to bring in all of these other communities. There's nothing, as far as I can think of, in the state party rules that requires that the way that you build your board is based on geography.
Yes.
And as you, as I think every one of you have said, in one way or another, the Progressive Caucus is about values, is a group of people based on that are organizing based on values. So maybe you could look at changing the makeup of the board so that you would, for example, you might say, for example, to the Black Caucus or the Pakistani Caucus or the Disability Caucus, that there's a place on the board for somebody from their board or that their board recommends to fill that post or something like that.
Yeah.
And find some other things to do like that to bring people into.
That would achieve what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are you running? Because that's an awesome idea. No, I agree. We're a value-based group. I think that having our values, as long as we don't kind of pocket ourselves into the progressive regions, I think that's probably why we have the geography, is so we don't have everyone from Ann Arbor, Lansing, and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I think, you know, maybe we could have both geography-based, maybe a, you know, the board members from geography, because there also is no rule on how many people can do it. We could also have, you know, our 3, 4, 5 biggest top issues. We could have someone represent those communities.
Mm-hmm.
In the Sierra Club, we did have an environmental justice person who joined our political committee and our executive committee and would was a voting member and would give a spotlight on those issues with everything. So
That's
a good idea.
So, by the way, that's not, I don't want to take full credit for that idea. That's actually, I've been thinking about that because in the Washtenaw County Democratic Party, Monica Ross Williams, who's running against you for treasurer, by the way, proposed that somebody from the Black Caucus be put on the board of the, of the county party. And I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, hey, there's more that we could do in that, in that range.
Yeah. I've heard a bunch of, this has been some, you know, a discussion I've been having with folks, like, how do we make the structure, how do we expand the structure basically, to allow for more leadership and representation.
I think there's a little bit more flexibility on some of the county parties, except for Kent and Wayne. From what I understand, there were rules put in, at one point, which only affected Wayne County because of the number of members they had, the Democratic Party had in that county. And it just so happens that over the years, Kent County has grown to be so big, they've also surpassed that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So those two counties have specific county rules in the Democratic Party rules versus what all the smaller counties.
Are there 1.5 million people in Kent County?
I don't think it was a population base. If I remember correctly from the last county meeting when we were talking about our executive board makeup and board makeup, that it was more based on how many members the county had in the party.
Yeah, there's nothing in the state party rules about that. The only numbers regarding a county or something like that in the state party rules come from state law, and the number is 1.5 million.
We might have surpassed it.
And,
I don't know.
Yeah, but So the other question is about regional, and I mean, because one of the things that I think that progressivism tends to be about is also about being grassroots up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways that the state party structures things is very top down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there's no reason that you have to do that in a caucus. So there are in the state party rules there are rules about how county and district parties have to do things, and those are partly because those come from state law, and so that there are some restrictions there. But in terms of a caucus, there is a lot more flexibility that you have in order to redesign the structure to be more bottom up.
Right.
Have you guys had any thoughts about that, or is that something that you're interested in doing?
I would definitely be interested in doing that. I did not realize that it didn't have to be top down the way you're describing, but of course, if that's the case, if we have the ability to make it more bottom up, for sure, I'd go for that.
Most of my involvement in like nonprofits and advocacy was in the cycling and mountain bike community over the last 20 years. And everything was from the ground up. I mean, you don't have top down. And if you want to make something happen, you do it locally.
So do any of you have any ideas about how to get more local activism out of the, you know, with the Progressive Caucus? Because like was mentioned earlier in the program, I think Tanya mentioned that the Progressive Caucus of Mid-Michigan, for example, is chartered by the Progressive Caucus, is a Progressive Caucus unit. And they've been very, very active. They do a lot of stuff. They do a lot of stuff on social media. They do events. Mike McCurdy is just rocking it out. And actually in this area, we're talking from Lansing right now.
I think I went to one of those events.
So I think there's an opportunity to build that, you know, as well when we have, and I'm just curious to see if there's, you guys have any thoughts about how to go about doing that or what you're looking to do there.
Well, I've been working with the Kent County Democratic Party's membership committee, and over the last year we held three events, two of which were very successful. And we got speakers in from Moms Demand Action regarding gun violence. And then we partnered with another group to bring the younger people in from the anti-gun movement that grew out of Stoneman High. And we did end up getting people at those events to sign up to be Kent County Party Democratic members. And I think we could look at something like that within the caucus and organizing events around, let's say, specific issues that focus on the values that we're looking at and have speakers come in. And what you're trying to do is you're not trying to just bring in people from the caucus because we've already got them, right? You want to broadcast it out and try to bring in people who aren't in the caucus who might want to stay with it. And if you make the issue something that has enough of appeal outside of just our... Yeah, you know, I think people will come in and they'll say, gosh, I should have been hanging around with these people all along.
Anybody else? Tanya? Sarah?
I mean, I think there are a lot of different ideas that we can talk about. I think it will also, I think an important part of our work is to build relationships with people that are, you know, working in their communities. I think we need to build some trust. We need to... find ways we can support the work that they're also doing. So I think it has to be, again, like Sarah was saying, doing some behind-the-scenes support work for a lot of these people. Yeah, but I think it's something, it's going to be, we're going to have to plan it and discuss it extensively, you know, discuss it, plan it. And I think it's going to be a little bit dynamic in terms of, you know, how it's going to look and yeah, so I'm not quite sure the shape it's going to take yet, but you know, I do think the most important thing for me is to make sure that we are having conversations and getting to know one another. You know, it could be through a town halls, it could be through, you know, one-on-one sessions, but I think that has to be that is an important part of the work. So that needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Not to like prolong the same conversation, but. And always bring up the Sierra Club, but that's where my background is. But we have regional groups all around the country that we, that staffers would consistently go to their meetings. And, but we also, they had their own executive committees and they kind of did their own thing. And, and that's been really successful for us to, because then we as like a board or like the, we don't have to go around recruiting volunteers all the time. We have these regional groups who are. So I think recruiting leaders in different regions to kind of take the torch and lead up is probably the way to start is to recruit people who are willing to put in that time.
Now that's one of the problems with when you have a top-down organization, even when you have lots of people who have great ideas and great energy and all of that, our culture teaches us to sit down and wait for the leaders to tell us what to do. And even when we don't think of ourselves as followers, very, very often a lot of people behave that way. Sometimes they say it's out of civility. Sometimes they say it's out of respect for the person. Sometimes it's inertia. So it's important to find a way to, it's important to find a way, I think, to activate that energy, that energy and capacity that's there, and get more people to feel like they don't have to wait for the state group to do something. They can organize. And one of the ways to do that is to help start you know, regional groups like the Mid-Michigan group. And again, that group is that way because there are a couple of people in there who said, I don't have to wait.
Yeah.
And finding ways to let people know that they don't have to wait, I think, might be a good process or a good part of the process. So another question is, a few days ago, I had a conversation with Lavora Barnes, who's running for MDP chair. And one of the things that I asked her was, you know, we put in a lot of effort to elect these legislators and governors and city clerks and all of the different elected folks that we work on. We have a certain expectation, and especially in the Progressive Caucus, being a values-based caucus, we expect to see certain kinds of progress. What I asked her is, what about, you know, the party is the people, not the candidates, holding our electeds, people that we helped get elect, to account for, you know, the promises that they made, and to make sure that there's progress being made, even if that progress isn't as much as we want it to. We want to push that so that we can get as much progress as possible. What do you think? You know, you've talked about, you know, different organizing stuff that you might do around different issues and so on. What about holding elected officials, people that we help get elected, for example, but also anybody that's elected, because they're supposed to represent all of us, holding their feet to the fire for progressive values? What do you think the role of the Progressive Caucus of the Michigan Democratic Party is in that area?
Numbers.
Okay, tell me about numbers.
I think, you know, our system is set up where in order to show power, you have to show your ability to vote in a way to... Your vote matters, basically. You have to show that your vote counts. Mm-hmm. And I think we show that our vote counts by showing that, well, look at all of us. Look at all of us here. Mm-hmm. We're voting, and our vote matters. And you are, you know, so I think that that plays a big part. I think, you know, showing strength in numbers is a big part of it. I think I'm going to have to... definitely, it's a very simplified answer I'm giving you right now. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to have to, personally, I want to think this through more. But right off the bat, I'm thinking we really need to grow. And I think that's a big piece of it. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I think along with numbers, I think showing up to things, making sure that when they have a coffee hour, we've got Progressive Caucus members there, asking them questions, right. Holding them accountable consistently.
Yeah.
So another potential thing that we could consider doing is having on our website or in a newsletter posting like, hey, these elected officials are hosting coffee hours in these regions.
Mm-hmm.
Try and make it. I also think training people to become citizen lobbyists is a really fun thing to do. It's not like corporate lobbyists. It's not like you're like going there with like bags of cash. You're going there as a citizen, and you're lobbying your vote, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's effective for things, especially if we have a particular issue.
I agree with both of them. In fact, somebody asked me that question on the thread on the Progressive Caucus Facebook page, and it's the same answer I said. The caucus needs to get more people to have a bigger voting block, to have more power.
Mm-hmm.
If you stay small, they're going to ignore you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she had a great point, too, about lobbying as citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I had an opportunity to do that a year and a half ago on behalf of the League of Michigan Bicyclists was pushing a 5-foot safety rule. And four of us went.
I was probably there.
Were you?
I did the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, so we went to Tom Leonard's office, and we went to Rick Jones' office because the Republicans ran everything.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Jones was pretty accommodating. Tom Leonard didn't meet with us. His aide did. We had a very contentious face-off with Tristan Cole, and I forget what the other office was, but I mean, We just said, look, we're here on behalf of this legislation, but we're not here lobbying on behalf of the group. We're lobbying as citizens. Mm-hmm. And luckily, they actually passed the law the next year. I don't know that we had any effect on it, but yeah, you got to knock on their door, go to their town halls.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not just Republicans, but also Democrats.
Yeah. Well, I went with the Republicans because they're the ones in charge of the committees and chambers at the time. But yeah. And I think we need to let our elected officials know when we disagree with them, like the vote that Peters and Stabenow just took recently. I just like.
Which one?
It's on the tip of my tongue, but
the anti-BDS stuff.
That curtails our
freedom of speech.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are they doing it? It's like. Boycotts work. That's our. If we want to boycott, that's up to us. Right. They. Why are they telling? That's no better than the state government saying, telling a city they can't do something, ban straws. You know, why are you even getting involved in that? Let them do what they need. That's democracy.
Well, see, but even more so because it's not just banning straws; it's actually banning speech. Dictating, you know, how we are allowed to spend our money or talk to our friends about how we might want to spend our money.
Yeah. The problem is that the hawks are afraid because it worked in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It'll work in Israel.
That's another really long discussion. We need to wrap up here.
You can really get in the weeds on that one.
But I do have one other question, if people have time. Yeah?
Got very little time.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big discussions in the party is over who to support, whether it's, you know, the candidate with the best policies or whether it's blue no matter who. And part of the problem that I have that what I want to point out is that those two things are not necessarily connected. The person with the best policies is not necessarily, or the candidate with the best policies in any given race is not necessarily the Democrat. I'm not saying it's the Republican because I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, no.
Not anywhere in my lifetime have I seen that yet. But sometimes it might be an independent, like Bernie Sanders, for example, is an independent. Or it might be somebody who's running on the green ticket, even if, you know, I wasn't a big fan of Jill Stein at all. But there are people that run on other tickets. And we're looking at moving the country forward into a place where we hope to have more parties than just two. Okay, as a progressive value of democracy. So there's rules in the Democratic Party about endorsements. For people that aren't party members. What do you folks think about that? What do you think makes sense in those that area of questions? Not going to ask a specific, but sort of just a general where people
tricky
are.
Tricky question.
Yeah. I think it's a tricky question, and I think it's one that requires really assessing and being strategic, right? Mm-hmm. Assessing where are you in this process of, as in, again, you know, I know that, you know, people who choose to vote green do it based on principle, mm-hmm. but sometimes, you know, it's almost like you're falling on your sword.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to really, so as a general way of looking at it, it's like, what does the landscape look like? What does it look like in terms of the viability of a third party candidate?
Mm-hmm.
How far along have we pushed things, you know, where we can make the case for this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to take time. Mm-hmm. I think we're still a ways off from that. But I do think the work that we are doing is, again, by making sure that, you know, we are operating according to rules, that we are, you know, advocating for transparency,
mm-hmm.
that we're really trying to get, you know, money out of politics. Mm-hmm. I think these are all things that are going to make the landscape or allow the allow for a viable, you know, third party or, you know, even more, you know, maybe fourth party.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of steps that need to be taken along the way. In the meantime, we definitely need to hold our elected officials accountable in mm-hmm. every possible way that we can. And I do think it does make those phone calls that people make and those rallies that people are engaging in do make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a, you know, it's not an overnight process. I don't know. Even as the Progressive Caucus, you know, we're going to have, I think, I would imagine that, you know, in the leadership of it, that you are going to have a few objectives that you're going to try to, few marks that you want to hit, mm-hmm. right? You're not going to be able to do it all mm-hmm. in one term, right? It's going to take several iterations.
Right.
So just as a general, again, it's just, you know, we have to also think that, we have to also realize that sometimes, I mean, the Republican, having Republicans in power have had grave consequences. Really, like these are extremely dire consequences for mm-hmm. a lot of communities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it really is important that mm-hmm. we do what we can to keep Republicans out of power. Mm-hmm. So there are so many factors here. Mm-hmm. But it can't be just a, you know, well, yeah. these are my principles and I'm mm-hmm. just going to do this according. Mm-hmm. I mean, principles, but also, and you have principles, right? You have your values. Mm-hmm. I don't think it makes you less of a person to mm-hmm. look at the landscape and assess mm-hmm. what is the best strategy going forward for, mm-hmm. for me and my neighbors and my community and my country mm-hmm. and the world, really. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I would agree. I don't like the phrase blue no matter who, because I think that implies that my vote will be taken for granted for a Democrat, mm-hmm. and I've always voted Democrat, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean right. that I wouldn't vote for a different candidate. But kind of going with you, I consider myself a pragmatic mm-hmm. progressive, mm-hmm. where, you know,
I'll tell you about that later. Go ahead.
So I vote for the candidate that I believe in. If they don't make it, I will look at viability as an option. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to look at, you know.
You mean in the primary, you vote for the candidate.
In the primary, yeah. I vote for the candidate that I
right.
am going to support, Paul.
Right.
When, whichever candidate wins, whether it's the one I supported or didn't support, I then look at who's viable, mm-hmm. you know, and unfortunately, we're at a point in our country where their third party candidates aren't necessarily viable at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they need to get some strong candidates out there. And mm-hmm. I haven't seen that yet in third parties. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't support someone and I wouldn't help them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I follow along with Tanya where mm-hmm. the Republicans have really just the effects of Trump's not even full first term in office mm-hmm. has been, you know, we are from an environmental standpoint, we are being pushed back potentially decades in yeah. environmental progress. You know, our CO2 emissions rose for the first time in a few years now, and that was based solely on the fact that rollbacks are going crazy. And so in my head, I'm like, oh my God, like if only we had just sucked it up and all voted for, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, just at the state level, the last 8 years.
We did.
Yeah.
Clinton won.
I know. Okay. And that's a whole nother issue of the college
which gets
electorate.
To a point I was going to make.
I voted for Hillary, too. I just want to say
it's really important that we should not be gaslighted just because they happen to be the founders and gave us something called an electoral college.
Thank you.
That is designed specifically to silence the people in favor of the powerful.
Absolutely.
And if you read Federalist 10, that's exactly what they intended it to do.
Exactly.
That's for landowners.
That actually segues real well. What I was going to say, part of the problem is that our winner-take-all district-oriented systems. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people talk about ranked choice voting. I'm not as big a fan of that. I would actually rather see us go to more of a proportional system mm-hmm. where, let's say, you have 100 legislators in your state legislature and you vote. You know, people say, I vote for the person, not the party. But really, when you're voting for the person, you're voting for the paradigms of most of the stuff that they're running for mm-hmm. most of the time mm-hmm. from that party. And, you know, you look at some of the European countries where they have parliaments and people get elected in a proportional manner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say we have 100 legislators and 40, you know, Democrats get 40%, the Republicans get 39%, mm-hmm. and the Green Party gets, you know, 10%, and the Libertarians get 5%. They would all have a seat in the legislature. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that until you get rid of gerrymandering and until you get rid of districts. And the whole district thing, you know this, Republicans went back into, 2009 and started Red Map Project mm-hmm. and basically attacked.
Yeah.
And from a big picture, people talk mm-hmm. about electoral fraud. The Republicans mm-hmm. like to talk about electoral fraud from the standpoint of a person impersonating somebody, mm-hmm. which is like minuscule effect on an election. Mm-hmm. But all you got to do is go into Ohio or Florida or Michigan now in a couple key precincts and key counties and flip switches on computers, those touchscreen computers, and you could throw the entire presidential election to another candidate. And there's already some indication that it might have happened in Ohio two elections ago.
Right. But I also want to point out that flipping to the other party is exactly what the Electoral College does. The only possible effect the Electoral College can ever have on an election is to change the will of the people, to ignore the will of the people, and impose the will of the powerful. That's the only effect that it can ever have just by its design. So it's not just at the computer level. That's fraud. That's voter fraud right there. That's election fraud right there. It's built into the Constitution.
But I think to your point, what she said about, you know, I voted for Abdul. I had the opportunity to introduce him at a town hall in Muskegon because I helped him find the venue. Mm-hmm. He was my candidate of choice. He didn't make it through the primary. And I did vote for Whitmer. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's not a matter of blue, no matter what, but I haven't yet seen a Democrat, even though I might not agree with everything they say, of the caliber of a Roy Moore or that Nazi in Illinois. Yeah. I mean, or what, Stephen King? Oh my
God. Or even Bill Schuette, right?
What's that?
Bill Schuette.
Creepy lamp.
You know, I mean, do I agree with everything that the blue candidates that we've always seen get put up? No. But they haven't been as egregious as I can't imagine. I don't understand why people on the Republican side vote for those guys. Mm-hmm. But
so if I've understood everybody here, it seems like everybody's in agreement that that nobody believes in blue, no matter who.
Right.
And everybody here at the table, everybody is against blue, no matter who, and wants or believes that the way that progressives should go about this. And certainly the way that each of you go about this is in a strategic manner to look at the candidates, and that were we to have a system where you had other parties that were viable, you would just because you're in the Democratic Party or part of the Progressive Caucus of the Democratic Party, it wouldn't necessarily hinder you from saying, you know what, this Democratic candidate isn't as good as, you know, this independent candidate or this particular Green candidate if they were actually viable in the election. And the question is viability, not party membership. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's a difference of would you rather vote for someone who will be with you 65-70% of the time, or would you rather let someone win who's going to be with you 0% of the time?
Zero.
And you're like, well, when I look at it that way, you know, it's like a swallow your pride kind of thing. And I think it's necessary in some circumstances, and for others, I think you should continue to. But like Tanya said, when you look at who's at risk, if you use your vote in a certain way, I think you also do have to look at that and be like, look, if this person gets elected because I voted for such a, like, they're going to be at a major disadvantage in the end. So sometimes I swallow my pride.
It's a difficult question for progressives. I'm glad we were able to talk about it. I'm sorry we don't have more time this time, but I hope that each of you would be interested in coming back again and going farther in some of these discussions.
Definitely. And I'll be here on time.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, Tanya Reza, running for Progressive Caucus Chair. Sarah, last name again?
Trezetter,
thank you. Running for treasurer of the Progressive Caucus, and Dennis Murphy running for secretary.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here, and look forward to seeing what you guys do in the future, regardless of who wins what.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.